This is the first day of the New Year retreat 2017. Or 2018. When my wife pushes the clock in front of me, I know that I need to sharpen up. It's just so wonderful to sit with people again. Such a great thing to happen. Of course, what always happens to some degree with everybody at the start of retreat, as we are trying to get accustomed to the lifestyle change of doing retreat together, is that the mind does a lot of thinking. Especially if you haven't done retreat or haven't done it at Poplar Grove. Everybody's bowing when you're doing something else. They're chanting while you're doing something else. They're facing left while you're facing right. And the whole world looks like a difficult place to be. And when we're in a difficult place, we we react from the place of difficulty. We fall back on our habitual ego patterning. And the ego mode of being in the world is to separate, or it is already separation, and comment of one kind or another. It could be just wanting more of it and wanting more of it and wanting more of it and being excited and thrilled and just never wanting it to end. It can be the other side of that same coin of thinking things must be a certain way, people must be a certain way, the teacher must be a certain way, we should chant or beat our drums or ring our bells or put our shoes in a certain way, and if that doesn't happen, then a judgment arises, comment, blame, anxiety, doubt. That whole nest, entanglement of responses, or we avoid or distract ourselves, turn our heads some way. That whole bundle of stuff that the world seems to operate on. And if we catch ourselves doing that, then already we are clear. And if we can't catch ourselves doing that, then we have only our great effort even in the midst of all this confusion, if you like, and complicatedness, there is still this. There is still the willingness to come when the gong rings, to bow when you enter the room, to struggle with a body that's getting used to a posture that feels new to it and sometimes very uncomfortable. The willingness to just keep going even in the middle of that is already great Zen practice, great practice of our life. We don't have to be in the spacious sort of heavenly mood all the time where the birds sound like angels. We write these poems every break. Must remember, birds, angels. That's great if it happens. Except that it's almost impossible not to want to hold it when it starts fraying at the edges. But sometimes our life is just keeping going in the midst of our confusion. And already then, our life has become great and shining. And when one wants to move in the middle of a sit, and you know that other people are feeling just the same, but keeping at it, one just has that appreciation of, okay, we're just putting in the hours, we're going off to work, straightening our tie, putting on our high heels. And it's something so deeply touching and beautiful about that. I don't get to see people in traffic jams much out here. The only time there's a traffic jam is if there's a fire. If there's a fire, the whole district gets into some kind of felt vehicle. Tractors, buckies, lorries, water tanks on the back. And they head out to wherever the fire is, put everything down. And fires always seem to start on Sunday afternoons after lunch, when you're having your week's reward on your back. And then suddenly we had one just before we left for the States. And people came from towns hundreds of miles away just because the call was out. And then someone had to stand outside a gate directing the traffic. Just, we're like something like 47 buckies in this little valley here, all just heading off. Great neighborliness. Anyway, I don't think that was what I was talking about. I was talking about people just going to work, just arriving on time, dressing nicely, doing their best. It's a wonderful quality, and it's very much at the heart of what our practice here is. Because when we do that, it means we're giving ourselves to the situation we're in. We're answering our own koan. How do I live this life? How do I live the life that I appear not to have chosen, but in the middle of which I seem to find myself? It means going beyond treating your life as an object from which you are separate and commenting, judging, liking, disliking, or doubting. Going beyond that into something else. Some clarity, some enlightenedness, some playfulness, some lack of anxiety and judgment. Going beyond our natural argumentativeness. There's a wonderful koan that some of you already know. As you do this more, you know that you do the koans again and again. You're just coming through a different door. A monk and Jojo are talking about Buddha nature. And the monk holds up a puppy. Says, does this dog have Buddha nature? Now the standard, the Buddhist orthodoxy says everything has Buddha nature. Everything is sacred. Everything is special and unique and unutterably moving. And yet, when Jojo was asked if the dog had Buddha nature, he said, no! Why did he say no? If you were the monk and you held up your grandchild and said, isn't she wonderful? And the other person said, it looks terrible. It's the ugliest thing I've ever seen in my life. It's your koan. How are you going to do? Okay. So what comes up immediately is our kind of argument mind. Of course she's beautiful. Look at that little nose. Oh, sweet. When Sarah was born, she cried like a hardy doll. I thought it was very funny. My wife didn't think it was so amusing. Look how beautiful she sounds. Isn't that sweet? She sounds like a hardy doll. Poor girls never recover. And when that kind of, we find ourselves in that kind of situation the whole time, just bringing our enthusiasm to something and having it being whacked. And how easy it is for us to just crumble in that. To just crumble, to doubt ourselves, doubt our instincts, doubt other people, get angry, want to correct them. So this koan, just like this retreat, is about that kind of situation. We want to say, no, Jojo, he's wrong. He's clearly wrong. But that doesn't really take us any further. It just it's kind of digs us into the zone of argumentativeness. Being right, being wrong, being right, being wrong. Should, shouldn't, should, shouldn't. comes up so instantly. So how do we work with that? How, when we bring the puppy to the Zen master and say, isn't he beautiful? And the Zen master says, no. How can we maintain that sort of innocence that we bring to that moment? How can, even if the teacher is wrong and is giving that as an opinion, which is one possibility, how do we help the teacher? How do we show the Buddha nature of that dog? How do we show the beauty and innocence of that puppy to the teacher? How do we break down the teacher's opinionatedness? Or, which may be just another angle on the same thing, can we stop and say, he's teaching me something here. My reaction is, he's wrong. Maybe there's something I'm not looking at. How can one keep that kind of integrity in the situation? Instead of blaming the answer, kind of rising up to meet it. Because once we start finding that possibility in every situation, then everything's possible. Then it's possible to go beyond that sort of suffering mode, if you like, or separation mode of argumentativeness and reactivity into something unassailable. So it's never about being more correct or about winning an argument. I'm not sure if that's even possible. I've been trying for a long time. How do we take every difficult moment this life presents us with and rise up to meet it, become one with it, step off the edge of the 100-foot pole, let go of all the trees and branches we're holding onto for dear life, how do we embody that puppiness of the young dog? How do we allow teaching and learning and growing to happen in every such moment? And we do that in our retreat. It's a kind of a contained experiment, if you like. Things are simplified. And we come in, we turn left when everyone turns right. That's incorrect. And being incorrect does not matter. And being incorrect does matter. And we keep trying And we make mistakes. And we turn right eventually when everyone else is now turning left. We follow the form with great meticulous attention, great selflessness. And we do our best to make it perfect. And when it isn't perfect, that's our practice. How do we rise to meet that? Oh, steak. Deadly. Even talks. Doesn't you agree with some things, you disagree with others. A lot of it you say, that sounds like rubbish. I don't get it at all. In a sense, what really matters here is just each of us giving ourselves to this moment. You just listening with as open a heart as you can. Me talking as best as I can. And the intimacy of this talking and listening is at the heart of this, not whether I say anything sensible or not, not whether you understand or agree or not. Just the intimacy of meeting each other in this activity lies at the heart of it. And maybe that helps us to look at the koan in a different way. The monk and the teacher talking about Buddha nature. Doesn't really matter who's correct or who's incorrect. Here's the puppy. Okay. Here's the puppy. Saying, look at me. Look at me. You're worrying about who's right and who's wrong, who's got Buddha nature. Look at me. Okay. It's wonderful. He's there. Right in front of you. How are we going to respond? And when it really doesn't matter what we think so much, what we like or dislike so much, then a kind of playfulness and an ease arises all by itself. And the monk and this teacher run off over the hill with the puppy and get lost forever and ever. Thank you very much.